Good morning, church family. Did you guys not get the memo? It's pajama Sunday. Comfy clothes. How many of you guys have comfy clothes? You know, the clothes that you put on when the day is done. Maybe you sleep in them, maybe not. What do you guys call them? I call them comfy clothes. What do you guys call them? It's comfy clothes? Pajamas? Hobo what? I call it married with children sexy. That's what I call it. So if you ever wonder around 8 o'clock at night, as I'm sure you would, what I look like, this is what I look like every night from 8 p.m. on. Got my comfy clothes. Jewelry's off, wedding band. Come on, you ever been there at the end of the day? You're like, I got to get the jewelry off. Ladies, I got to get the undergarment. Like, the bra's got to go. Like, no restrictions. Like, and it's so relieving to get it all off. And the necklaces, the jewelry, everything. Everything's got to go. Bare essentials. And make it baggy. Comfy clothes. So, back in the 90s, I heard about a church that I had never heard of. I thought it was just a church that was here in the Grand Rapids area. What I started to learn over the last few years is not only are there campuses all over the United States, but it's one of the fastest growing churches in America. Hey, Kevin. You know that bass line that we accidentally plugged this mic into? Yeah. Do you know what the gain knob is at the top? Can you turn that gain down? Because apparently my gain is up from sound check this morning and I'm ringing. Thanks, Kevin. Oh, well, it's still a little ringing. Bring it down just a skosh more. Yeah, because apparently I'm louder at 9:30 than I am at 8:30. Oh, what's that supposed to mean? So I heard about this church in the 90s, thought it was just a local church, and come to find out there's campuses all over the country, and it's the fastest growing church in America. And the thing is I'm pretty sure that every single one of us at some point in our Christian life, whether you want to admit it or not, you have visited this church, and you've even thought about becoming a member. Bedside Baptist. How many of you guys heard of Bedside Baptist? You know, you wake up Sunday morning, you're like, yeah, no. We are not getting up. We are not going out. We are staying in our comfy clothes. So we're wrapping up our Lighten Up series. You've probably figured out how we're going to wrap the series up. Rest. Rest. For those of you that have been a part of New Vintage for a while, you know that years ago, I gave you a warning, a little bit of a disclaimer, that as the years would go on, you would hear certain stories repeatedly. And I wanted to warn you because I don't get online and scour pastoral resources and try to find interesting anecdotes and stories. I just tell you stories from my life, and I've just got the one life, so I've just got the one set of stories. So I want you to reframe it in your mind before I say what I'm about to say. I want you to reframe like, oh, I've already heard this one. I want you to think of it like Mr. Jones by the Counting Crows, right? I want you to think of it like a Nirvana song, like, oh, that song again. Love that song. It's one of my favorites, all right? That's how I want you to frame this up moving forward. But for those of you who have just become part of New Vintage over the last year, this is a new song for you. And it's a song about my friend Christine. My friend Christine, she came from the other side of the tracks. Her family was of means. At 16 years old, mom and dad bought her a brand new, brand spanking new Honda Civic. She drove to school with it. And Christine, the thing about Christine is, you know, a lot of things in their life were done for them. And she enjoyed that new Honda Civic for about a week. And all of a sudden, it just died. Brand new car. And it would turn over, but it wouldn't start. She had to get a tow. took it to the shop, and everybody at the dealership, they were scratching their head. We can't figure out what is wrong with this car. This car is brand new. I mean, right? I mean, the odometer hardly has anything on it. Day one, day two, and day three. And finally, after 3 or 4 days of the car being in the shop, one astute serviceman gets an idea. He's like, I'm going to check something out a minute. And he goes out to the shop. And sure enough, he calls the family. He says, when was the last time you put gas in it? And the thing is, we can laugh at my friend Christine and not learn anything from it. Because for too many of us, that's how we live. We just keep going and going and going. And our spirit, our soul, our bodies, our minds, we need moments of rest stops. We need moments where we stop and refuel. You ever see friends that you haven't seen in a minute? And, hey, how have things been? Oh, dude. And like it used to be a few years ago, like, oh, man, things have been busy. And they have been, right? If you're married and you have kids and you live in America, it's been busy. But how many of you know the word that we use now? It's not just busy. We put an adjective in front of it. Man, things have just been crazy busy. And crazy busy is like the new norm. Like if you're not crazy busy, it's almost like people are looking at you with suspicion. Like, well, what are you doing with your life? Like somewhere, like crazy busy. If you're not crazy busy, you must be lazy. The Japanese have a word for this, but it's not a fun word like crazy. Right? Like crazy makes it sound like busy is fun. The Japanese have a word for this. It's called karoshi. It means death from overwork. It's an epidemic in Japan. And it has been for over 30 years. Roughly 2,500 people a year die in Japan simply from getting run down and overworked. They don't sleep enough. They don't nourish their bodies enough. They're lonely and they're depressed. And so karoshi often results either in sickness because they get so run down and they never have rest time to recover from sickness, or they end up committing suicide because they feel so alone and hopeless. The Center for Disease Control, I'm sorry if that cough was really loud in the speakers, I should have turned away. Now, the Center for Disease Control here in the United States, they haven't put us at karoshi status yet, but if you follow some of the stories, the headlines, or the CDC website, as I'm sure you do, I'm sure you all have it bookmarked, I wonder what the CDC is talking about this week. But they've been warning us for a while, since the 80s really, that we are headed that direction. And the thing is that for us, it's a little more sneaky. For us, it's sneaky because it's not the obvious 60 and 65 and 70 hour work weeks that have become a cultural norm. Like we don't have that. For us, it's sneakier in that we have two things that are happening in our culture that are kind of ramping us up. And one of those things is the creep of work. Not work creep like the guy in the cubicle that keeps coming over to talk to you. The inability to leave work at work started with the pager in the 90s. Oh, I'm on call. And some of us, I mean, we're in a job where we need to be on call. I'm thankful for doctors who are on call, right? I am thankful. Like when I got in an accident years ago, I was thankful for a dentist that was on call when I put my teeth through my lip and ripped my lip up into my cheek and my face was hanging off, right? I was thankful for a dentist that was on call. But it becomes this creep into home life, checking work emails, right? Taking work on vacation with us. But the more sinister is that we don't have a shut off because of this little thing. What's interesting is that we're going somewhere with this, and I'm not going to tell you to throw away your phones for Jesus at the end of the day. So everybody just relax, unclench your butt cheeks for a minute. In 2015, the CDC would report, as they did reports with Android analytics and iPhone analytics, that adults touched their phones on average 144 times. In other words, you turned the screen on roughly 144 times a day. Now, in January of 2024, so just a month ago, statistics would say that most adults turn their phone screen on roughly 94 times a day. Oh, we're making progress, right? Like, we're touching it about 50 times less a day. Well, here's the thing. In 2015, statistics would say we were spending roughly 3.5 hours on average a day. Now we're spending roughly 4.5 hours on average a day. The same research would say that in 2015, we were touching our phone, meaning every time you swipe, a keystroke, any of that, that we were touching our phones roughly 3,500 times a day, 3,500 touches in some way on your phone. Today, we're up to 5,500. By the way, let me circle back around for just a minute. That number, 144 times turning on the screen, and now we're at 94. In other words, the number of times we're turning the screen on is down, but the amount of time that we're spending engaged, right, because apps have become more engaging, developers know how to, like, keep us engaged, keep us swiping. So we're actually spending more time, we're just turning it on less times. And the thing is about that number, from 144 times turning the screen on to 94, that's for boomers and Gen Xers. So we're somewhere between about 90 and 150 times we turn on our phone today. Millennials and Gen Zers put that number between 900 and 1,500 times a day that they're turning their screen on. So from the, right, the first digital native, like for me, digital was new, right? Like the boomer generation, like I remember when I got my first TV. For us Gen Xers, I remember when I got my first smartphone. But for our kids, for Gen Zers, like they've just always, like we always grew up with a TV, they always grew up with a screen. And so whereas we have 150, we're topping out 150 times turning our phone on, they're turning theirs on 900 to 1,500 times a day. Just check it, 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 check it. And then John Piper comes along, Pastor John Piper from Bethlehem Baptist Church. And he tweets this out a few years ago. One of the great uses of Twitter and Facebook will be to prove at the last day that prayerlessness was not from a lack of time. Almost three decades ago, youth pastor Mike Iaconelli, in his book Messy Spirituality, he writes this: we are going as fast as we can, living life at a dizzying speed, and God is nowhere to be found. We're not rejecting God. We just don't have time for him. We've lost him in the blurred landscape as we rush to church. We don't struggle with the Bible, but with the clock. It's not that we're too decadent. We're too busy. We don't feel guilty because of sin, but because we have no time for our spouses, our children, or our God. It's not sinning too much that's killing our souls. It's our schedule that's annihilating us. Most of us don't come home, Mike says. Most of us don't come home at night staggering drunk. Instead, we come home staggering tired, worn out, exhausted, and drained because we live too fast. He wrote that 30 years ago. 120 years ago, E.M. Bounds wrote, just a few years before the first car came off the Ford assembly line, he wrote, "If Satan can keep us too busy, he has effectively disarmed us." He wrote that 120 years ago. Busyness was a cancer then. Back before we were touching our phones and staying at work and going and going and going and going and going. And in this blurred landscape, Jesus' invitation is unmovable. The invitation that we started this series with, and more than an invitation, I think it might be a command. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened. That's us. That's you. That's me. Come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest for your soul. I'm all for therapy, counseling, meds when necessary. I'm all in. But I wonder if our need for those things would lessen if we would just take Jesus at his word. Come to me, all you who are weary and you're heavy laden, you're heavy burdened. You've got a lot on your mind, a lot on your plate, a lot in your life. Yeah, I get it. Come to me, and I will give you rest for your souls. He didn't say he'd make it better. He said in this world you'll have trouble. I will give you rest for your soul. Come take a load off. Come lighten up. Come lay your burdens down. Cast your burdens, your anxieties on me because I care for you. And he goes on, he says, because my burden, my work is, my burden is easy and my yoke, my work is light work. And when he says, come to me, the implication there is you can't stay where you're at. No, you have to come over here. If I invite you to my house, it means you're there, and I'm saying, I want you to come over here. And you're there doing that thing, but I want you to come over here and do this thing. And I think there's this invitation and command from Jesus. You're doing it this way, and you're living day to day in and out this way. I'm inviting you to come over and live it this way, to do something different. When he calls out to Peter and he says, come, follow me. The implication there is, no, you can't stay here and keep doing what you're doing. Following involves movement. And the way I do it is the way I want you to do it. And it's going to be upside down. It's going to be countercultural. It's going to be disruptive to the way that you used to do things. That's what the word repentance means. It means I have a change of mind followed by a change of heart, completed by a change of action. I hear what you're saying. I think you're right. I trust you. And I'm going to try it your way. I'm going to do it your way. And the Jews had a word for this, a word that speaks against karoshi, overwork, burdened, a word that just, I think there's a word here that God speaks to us then and a word that God is still speaking today that would break, that would bring life. And this word is the Hebrew word Shabbat, where we get our word Sabbath or rest. And so for the Hebrews, for the Israelis, for the Jews, Sabbath was, amongst other things, a day of rest. Now, there were multiple Sabbaths. They had seasons of Sabbaths and year of Jubilee. We're not going to get into all that today, but that once a week there was a Sabbath. And Opal read it for us this morning out of Leviticus. God would command the Jews, there are 6 days when you may work, but the seventh day is a day of Sabbath rest, a day of sacred assembly. You are not to do any work wherever you live. It is a Sabbath to the Lord. And this word Sabbath, it has a twofold meaning. It means to cease, and it means to delight. Ah, that is so cool. It means to cease and delight. In other words, it means stop and smell the roses. That's what it means. For 6 days. And so this is how it would look in a Jewish household. On Friday afternoon, you knew that when the sun went down, the entire community was going to shut down. And this is still true in Jerusalem today, that on Friday afternoon, like there is just a bustle of activity. I mean, people they're sweeping their houses, they're getting cleaned up, they're finishing, right? And today, I mean, they're all right, we're going to finish up our emails. And then when sundown hits, it's like the SAT. Whether you were finished with the SAT or not, when the instructor said time, it was pencils down, hands up. Your work is done, but I'm not done with the test. You're done. You're done. I didn't finish it, though. You're done. And so sundown Friday, Sabbath would begin. Rest would begin. Have a special meal. Sometimes a lighting of candles. They would have ceremonies and rhythms and rituals that would help them slow down and leave the work behind, even if the work wasn't finished. Because let's be honest, America, it's never finished. Come on, you ever find yourself doing this? Okay, just one more email. Okay, let me just a couple more texts, and then I can shut my phone off, and I can be present. But then the person you texted back, and then a third party heard what you texted to this person because now they're talking to somebody like, hey, why did you say that to so-and-so? Hey, are we still getting together? Okay, now I'll reply to that text. And then your TikTok notification because your favorite person just posted new content, and it's a kitten. And now you're over there, and now you're doing this, and there's just one more TikTok video, and there's one more, right? And there's always one more counter to clean. There's always one more thing to put on the schedule. There's always one more email to check. There's always one more voicemail. It's a carrot on a stick. And Shabbat says, time! Pencils down, hands up. And what would happen? I mean, if you disobeyed the instructor, right, you would have failed. And God says, time. And until sun up Sunday morning, it was a day of rest. Saturday was a day of rest. Reconnection and sacred assembly. Friends, family, faith family would get together, share a meal. There was effort, right? But it was a different kind of work. It was a work that filled them up. It was a work that filled one another up. They would stop and smell the roses. And what Sabbath rest does, it not only gives us a chance to recover, because we need recovery. Okay, it was a good week. It was a bad week. It was a rough week. It was a busy week. Whatever kind of week it was, I need a day to recover from the week. And now I also need a day to prepare for the week to come. Because we're about to start the cycle all over again. It's like the old Paul the Lumberjack story. Paul gets hired on Monday. He's a big, strong lumberjack. The foreman hires him. Day one, he goes out and he cuts down 500 trees. Tuesday, he comes in, cuts down 450 trees. On Wednesday, he comes in, cuts down 300 trees. On Thursday, he comes in, he cuts down 100 trees. And by Friday, he barely makes it through 20 trees. And the foreman brings him his money on Friday, and he says, Paul, you started out great, but you ended horribly. I don't know what happened. And Paul seems just as confused as the foreman, like, I don't know, I'm a really good lumberjack. He gives him his pay, and he lets him go. On his way out, the foreman picks up Paul's axe, and he runs his finger over the blade, and he says, Paul, when was the last time you sharpened your blade? When was the last time you put gas in this thing? What Sabbath helps you and I do is get into rhythm. You and I were designed for rhythm. I remember one of the first times teaching on this years ago here at New Vintage, and one of our college students came up to me afterwards, and I was talking about getting into a routine. And I remember them coming up to me after church, and they said, thanks, but no thanks. That sounds horrible. Like, routine, like everything just sounds so routine. Like, that sounds like married people stuff. And they were right out. They said, you know, like, our generation, millennials, we want to be spontaneous. And as we got in the conversation, I said, maybe a better way to think about routine is to think about it as rhythm. And rhythm allows you to be spontaneous. Rhythm is like jazz, right? It allows you to free flow, but there's structure. God created the entire universe, including you and I, with rhythm, because it says something about Him. God is a God of rhythm. There's winter, and there's spring, and there's summer, and there's fall, and there's winter, and there's spring, and there's summer, and there's fall. And if you're in Michigan, there's winter, and there's winter. There's hot as hell. There's fall. The rain falls and the rain evaporates, and the rain falls and the rain evaporates, and the rivers flow in and the lakes flow out, and there's movement and there's rhythm, and the sun comes up and the sun goes down, and the sun comes up and the sun goes down, and the sun comes up and the sun goes down, and the earth travels around every 365 1/4 days. Again and again and again and again, and there's new life and there's death, and there's new life and there's death, and the heart that's beating in your chest has rhythm. Boom, 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 boom. This is why we love music. We love rhythm. We thrive best in rhythm. When Annette and I were pregnant with Miles, and when I say Annette and I mean Annette. Some friends of ours shared with us the book Baby Wise. The premise of Baby Wise, if you've never heard it, is a contrast, a research-based contrast between on-demand feeding and getting a baby on a rhythm, scheduled feeding. And the idea was you don't feed the baby when it cries. You feed the baby every 3 hours. It's going to cry. It's going to fuss. Don't feed it. And they talked about developmentally what happens when you get a baby into a rhythm, how within a few weeks it is sleeping through the night. And we see parent friends of ours months and months and months, sometimes years in, and they still just look worn out. I'm not getting any sleep. Baby's keeping me up all night. And we're like, we can't relate. I mean, we had nights where Miles was fussy or sick, but for the most part, all of our kids, they got into a rhythm, right? They respond to rhythm. They weren't as colicky, right? Their development was different. God made you and I with rhythm. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. Now, we're Protestant. We're Christians. So if you appreciate weekends, you can thank the Jews and the Christians. That was a collaborative effort. They already had Saturday. The early church, they're like, well, we don't want to take over Sabbath. We want to celebrate the Lord's Day. And he rose on Sunday morning, first day of the week. So we're going to make that the Lord's Day. So now we have Saturday and Sunday. You're welcome, America. The weekends are thanks to the church. In music, I remember being in choir. And Mrs. Middleton was teaching us quarter notes, half notes, whole notes. Anybody remember that from like junior high, learning the basics of music? Here's the one that fascinated me. And then there was the oval. Anybody remember what the oval is? Rochelle, you should know this. And then you had, what was the rest note? Right? It's got the... They didn't just leave the page blank. Right? You could have had the staff, and you could have just had nothing. Like, you're not playing, like, there's nothing. There's nothing there. But no, 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 there is something there. I want you to get this. There's not nothing there. Even though there's no music on a rest note in sheet music, there is something there. It's a rest note. In other words, this moment is filled with something. What is it filled with? It's filled with nothing. Sabbath isn't just nothingness. It's a day that's filled. What is it filled with? It's a day that is filled with nothing. It's different. It's like it has boundaries. Like the rest note has boundaries. Sabbath has boundaries. It's like a fence. Pencils down, hands up. Work is done, but my work isn't. It's done for now. It's not nothing. It's not nothing because you can just fill in nothing. No, no. This is something that is filled with nothing. Tracking with me. You'll get this about 9:30 tonight, and you'll be like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. I need to text Pastor Mark and buy him a nice bottle of bourbon. You're welcome. It's rhythm. And that rhythm not only allows us to recover, but it prepares us for the work ahead. This is why China doesn't have karoshi. Japan has karoshi because they go and go and go and go and go. Hey, when was the last time you stopped, sharpened your blade, filled your tank? Crash and burn. Not China. China is go to work, it's go to lunch. Anybody know what they do after lunch? It's nap time. Corporate China. I saw a doc on this in the 90s, and I was like, China's where it's at. They take naps. Now, not every single person, but it is a cultural tradition. And the thing is, they just take a little 20-minute power nap, let lunch digest, but their effectiveness for their afternoon work, way above America. Because they took a little Sabbath in the middle, a little rest note. This isn't just 20 minutes of nothing. This is 20 minutes of something. It's a nap. And that 20 minutes is filled with nothing. Same is true in Mexico. You know why they get a lot done? Siesta. Okay, we've been working. Had a little lunch. It's time for a little lunchtime nap. Put the hat down. 20 minutes later, I'm good to go. How many of us, we get to like 2:30 in the afternoon, we're like, man, I need a 5-hour energy drink. Because we don't have a rhythm. We don't put rest notes where we should probably put rest notes. We think, right, and this is the broken world we live in. Just go, 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 go. But you're not a machine. You're a person. And you're made in the image of God. God himself, he worked for 6 days. Genesis tells us he worked for 6 days creating everything. And then on the seventh day, he's like, today is Smell the Roses Day. Today I'm going to enjoy what I actually worked for. I'm going to enjoy creation. I think rhythm creates speed bumps for us, if nothing else, because it slows us down. Not only does ceasing have a purpose, but I think ceasing does something to the other 6 days that's like a speed bump, like, just slow down. Because I don't know about you, but I get going. Years ago, we went to Jamaica, and I commented to our family that we were there with. I was walking with Annette and Faye. We were headed to dinner to meet up with the rest of the family. I said, do you notice the pace that we're walking at? And we did. I said, do you remember Sunday when we flew in? You can always tell the intakes at the resort. You can always tell the American intakes, right? The first world intakes, because we're all walking to our rooms like this. Friday afternoon, we're walking to dinner. I'm on island time. This is what Jimmy Buffett was singing about. And I know what you're thinking. Like, yeah, you're on vacation. Anybody can do that on vacation. It's true. It's fair. But what if we wrestled with the question, why? What if we could learn something from vacation and go, maybe the fact that this is such a drastic change from my normal routine should say something about how I live day to day. Like maybe there's something I could learn from vacation that maybe God's original plan was that every 6 days I would have a vacation. That there's vacation time built into creation. It's called Sabbath. It's a day to do this. Just walk slow. We're on Sabbath time. Maybe I should create a playlist on Spotify, which is like Jimmy Buffett and Bob Marley songs, and share it with you guys. And then every Sunday morning on your way to church, just listen to that. Right? Scott can hook you guys up with some edibles. Everybody could just chill the heck out for a minute. Look, if vacation for you, because some of us, we vacation harder than we work. You ever come back from vacation? You're like, man, I need a vacation from vacation. Because you're exhausted. Let me just say something to the extroverts in our church family and listening to our podcast. For some of you, going is like recreational activity, is vacation for you. I'm not judging you, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that's not me, and that's fine. But if vacation for you is, man, we got to go cliff diving, and then we got to go scuba diving, and then we're going to go cave diving, right? And then, cliff diving and skydiving and cave diving and scuba diving and, right? And you just, that's great. That's a gift from God. Breathe it in. Seize the day. Set an alarm for 6 a.m. and go do it. Breathe it in. Take it all in. Do it. But at some point, you have to exhale as well. We're just inhaling, we're just taking it all in. I'm on vacation, I gotta eat it, I gotta drink it, and I gotta do it, and I gotta go, and I gotta go, and I gotta go. And at some point, yeah, you're taking it all in, and at some point you gotta, because that's rhythm. That's how God built your body. You inhale, and you exhale. Somewhere on vacation should probably be, this is why when you feel like, I need a vacation from a vacation. What you're saying is, I need to exhale at some point. I need a day to just. bet you're wondering what they're doing in Denmark this morning. Oh, man, I tried. Lord, I tried. And they just didn't. Okay. You know what they're doing in Denmark this morning? So glad you asked. Nothing. So quite a few years ago, as God continued this cycle in my life about slowing down and learning to rest, she sent me an article about a tradition that they do in a couple of countries over on their side of the pond, Denmark being one of them. It's a tradition called Haga. Haga is kind of like the antithesis to Karoshi. Haga is going on right now. So here's how it works in Denmark. Every winter, everything slows down. People that work 40, 45-hour weeks through December, January, February, they work about 20, 25-hour weeks. The whole country, everybody. People sleep in longer. They eat more. They drink more. They have friends over more. It's like a three-month holiday. So back in December, as I was getting ready for this conversation here this morning, I got online and I was looking up Haga just to refresh my memory. And I was reading the Denmark Chamber of Commerce website, and I thought this was interesting. They said, as word about Haga has spread through the internet around the globe, more and more people from developed nations are now coming to Denmark during Haga because they want to participate in Haga. Now, here's the quandary. And they put it right on their website. Thing is so now, like our greatest tourist season, in other words, the time that we should be the busiest, because now all these people from America are coming and they want to eat at our restaurants and they want to drink in our pubs and they want to stay in our inns and our hotels, thereby creating a demand for work. And in the Chamber of Commerce of Denmark, they said, if you arrive, just understand, we may not be available. We are celebrating Haga as a people, and there may be no room in the inn. And there may not be a restaurant open at the time you want it open. A lot of restaurants, they may be just open for a few hours at dinner, and that's it. So you can come, you might not enjoy it. What a great, honest, tourist webpage. What I love about it is the no compromise. We are not going to speed up just because you're here. We're celebrating as a country, as a culture, as a people. We're slowing down. We're going to enjoy it. You're better off coming in June or July. So I'm going to close with this. What if we took Sabbath seriously? What if, oh, I'm about to poke the sacred cow. What if we ceased when the sun went down on Saturday? What if we returned to a rhythm? And look, I'm talking to me, like this has ramifications for what we do at Skeletones. And I don't mean this to be legalistic. I just mean it to be thought-provoking. That what if we developed a rhythm? That on Saturday night when the sun went down, so during the winter months in Michigan, around 3 p.m. Saturday, what if we said, work is done, running around is done, and we started a rhythm of rest. You know, we've said for years, whatever you do, starting about 8 o'clock the night before, whatever you do starting around 8 o'clock the night before will always either make a deposit into the next day, or it will be a withdrawal from the next day. You guys know what I'm talking about? Every night, from about 8 o'clock on, depending on when your bedtime is, could be a little earlier, could be a little later, but whatever you choose to do as a wind-down rhythm or routine will determine whether or not you're making a deposit into the next morning, into the next day, so that you have something in the tanks, or it's going to make a withdrawal where you wake up the next day and you're like, man, I've been burning the candle at both ends because I made a withdrawal last night. Like, what if we had a rhythm of rest on Saturday night so that when we got up, when the alarm went off Sunday morning, Bedside Baptist maybe didn't have as much of a draw? What if we came in here and we're like, man, I'm rested and I'm ready to receive? Because I believe what Scripture says, that God has called my leadership to equip me and empower me and speak life into me. And I'm here and I'm bright-eyed and I'm bushy-tailed and I'm ready to receive. And I think God has a word for me. And I think that God is going to, that word is going to change my life. That word is going to encourage me and challenge me and get me to think. Right? And it's going to be a life-giving word. And it's not just going to be life-giving to me. It's going to be life-giving to the people that I live with, the people in my household, the people I work with, the people I'm influenced with. Like, and like, maybe we would see miracles again. Maybe we would see the power of God move again because we're not sleeping through it. That we would show up, we're like, man, I'm ready to serve. I'm ready to be a part of the family, right? I'm ready to give. I'm ready to sit through a whole sermon without like, what? Just a what if. And I wonder what if we started a rhythm on Saturday, a Sabbath rhythm on Saturday night. I wonder what that would do to us emotionally. I wonder how that would change us mentally. Like, I wonder what that would do for our mental state if we got like a full night of sleep, an evening of rest. And I don't know what rest looks like for you. And I'm just saying, these are what ifs. These are not legalistic do's and don'ts. But like, what if we turned the TV off? What if we silenced the notifications on our phone so that, it just buzzed. Okay, I'm sorry, you were saying. Like, what if this got plugged in like mine does on Mondays, goes face down and sits for as long, for some of us that's gonna drive us crazy. I'm not addicted to my phone. Okay, put it away for a day. I just don't want to. I can stop anytime. Meanwhile, we're driving and we're like, this is nothing like drinking and driving. This won't cause accidents. I'm not addicted. I wonder what it would do to our spiritual health, our mental health, our physical health, our relational health. I wonder what it would do in our homes if Saturday nights was an exhale. We're going to exhale until Monday morning. I wonder how it would change our work Monday morning. I wonder how it would affect our ministries. You have a ministry. I have a ministry. We all have a ministry. You're all in leadership. As soon as you chose to follow Jesus, he made you a leader in the making. You're called to lead your families, lead your communities, lead your workplace, lead people to Jesus. We're all in a discipleship-making business. But when was the last time we had time for that? When was the last time we had brain space for that? When was the last time we had time to pray? Read a devotional. Talk to somebody about Jesus. It's not sin that's killing us, Mike Iaconelli said. It's our schedule. We're trying to do too much. So, Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I'm God. And I will be glorified amongst the nations. Do you see the pattern? You sit still. Stop and smell the roses. And then watch what happens through you after that. At some point, we put our life on do not disturb for a day. I challenge you to do it. See what happens. So, I'll leave you with a question. When was the last time you sharpened your blade? When was the last time you put gas in this thing? Father, thank you. You never give up on us. And that we fill our lives with so much noise and anxiety and our idols and our toys and our distractions. And God, we're not really better for it because it's all out of whack. It's all in the wrong place. And God, we've put good things in place of the best thing, which is you. Give us grace to repent, to take Sabbath rest seriously, because you're such a good God. You are a God that is full of ecstatic joy. Not just in what you give us, but in who you are. Lord, I pray that this week we would examine our Sabbath rhythms, our relationship to work and rest, and ultimately how that affects our relationship to you and to others in our life. Make us a people of Sabbath rest, because now more than ever, God, our world needs you. Help us rest in you. To shut down and shut off and be with you, to be still. And to really know and keep knowing that you're God, not us. We ask this in your name, Jesus. Amen.